Hello, this is Tamara with the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, December 17th. Let's start with the front page. We have several photos from Decatur Parks on course for Christmas. Hickory Point Golf Course transformed into holiday display. Our first photo is of a family driving a golf course through Hickory Point Golf Course to view the trees and the tees decorations. We have the Heart and Soul Choir singing Christmas carols for visitors at Trees on the Tees at Hickory Point on Wednesday, December 10th. And then just beautiful lights. Nora Matusik, too, looks at the train display at Trees on the Tees at Hickory Point. And Brittany Doolin of Mawiqua helps her children, Cassidy, Emmas, and Daphne, roast marshmallows over a fire at Trees on the Tees on Wednesday, December 10th. Photos from Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review. Now from Valerie Wells in Warrensburg, Education. Big and bright and memorable Christmas. Decking the halls at Warrensburg Latham becomes tradition. 6 years in, the annual decking of the halls by teachers and PTA members at Warrensburg Latham Elementary School is no longer a surprise to the students old enough to remember past years. The little ones, however, don't know it's coming. The adults stayed late on Friday to get the decorations up so they'd be ready for the students on Monday morning when they came to school, but the preparations have been going on for weeks. This year, I just thought, let's celebrate with the Gingerbread Man and the different versions of the Gingerbread Man story, said Karen Futen, who heads up the project. This first hallway is the original Gingerbread Man, and when you turn the corner, we have Gingerbread Girl, and if you go the other way, you have Gingerbread Baby. Without knowing it, the students helped make the large paper posters and banners that cover the walls and the hallways. As art projects in class, the children made snowflakes and snowmen and gingerbread figures, which their teachers used as decorations on those banners. This has definitely been a labor of love, Futen said. I've had a lot of help. Now from Tony Reed in Decatur, Group Cap ADM Carbon Storage. Group calls for end to sequestration biz in city council meeting. Rumblings of discontent about Archer Daniels Midland Company's carbon sequestration business burst into the open at Monday evening's Decatur City Council meeting. Some eight members of the Bloomington-based advocacy group, Illinois People's Action, urged councilors to bail out of a 2023 easement agreement with ADM, allowing it to store liquefied carbon dioxide beneath city land that includes the geography under Lake Decatur. The council took no action at Monday's meeting on the issue, and Corporation Counsel Wendy Morthland said there currently are no legal grounds to cancel the agreement. IPA says the science of controlling greenhouse gas emissions by grabbing CO2 and stashing it deep underground is a dangerous, false solution to combating the perils of climate change. The group claims the process puts drinking water sources at risk of contamination. IPA also accuses ADM of not negotiating in good faith with the city over the lease agreement on storage. It says the company knew, months before a 99-year easement agreement was signed, that hundreds of tons of CO2 waste had leaked from deep storage wells in Decatur. So now it was high time to tear up the agreement and back out, said John Baird of Decatur, who was described as an IPA leader and one of the speakers who addressed the council. We all want the best outcomes for Decatur and for our businesses, said Baird. And we recognize that ADM has been very good for Decatur. But a tragic carbon sequestration accident would not be good for ADM or Decatur. Baird said the risks of a bigger leakage accident in the future were just too great. Let's take a more cautious approach to our future, Baird implored the council. Please nullify the 99-year easement and let's proceed more cautiously for the sake of our future. In March 2024, it was discovered that 8,000 metric tons of CO2, about 3 days' worth of injection, had seeped out of where it was supposed to be held securely more than 5,000 feet below ground. The leak was caused by corrosion in a deep monitoring well dating back to 2023 and has since been plugged. ADM worked rapidly to correct the issue, and both the company and the Environmental Protection Agency emphasized the leak never came near to endangering drinking water supplies for people or even livestock. The majority of the seven strong council did not react publicly to the IPA comments, but they found a sympathetic ear in Millikan University biology professor and council member David Horn. He agreed it was time to pull out of the sequestration deal with ADM, which declined comment for this story. Horn accused ADM of being unethical in its dealings with the city by not revealing there had been leaks before that easement agreement was signed. He referred to other leaks and problems and added, "The residents of Decatur are justified in asking whether a more significant leak is simply inevitable, particularly given that sequestration activities are expected to intensify in scope." Horn asked if there were now legal grounds for pulling out of the easement with ADM, but Morthland said a flat no to that issue. She said no leaks so far have endangered water supplies or risen to the level that public health was put in danger. "So I don't believe that there has been a finding by a permitting agency, court or tribunal, federal or state, that there had been a violation at this point that adversely affected the long-term storage," she added. And while the council took no action at Monday's meeting on the issue, its past history shows the city's leadership did feel a ripple of unease in the wake of the big CO2 leak. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf had later said that the situation could have been handled better, and in October 2024, the city had selected an outside legal firm specializing in environmental law to represent taxpayer interests on issues of sequestered CO2 leakage if such representation became necessary. Former city manager Tim Gleason had said at the time that hiring the law firm was not an indication the city thought there was something wrong, but he added, "I think it's a prudent move on the city's part to be represented on something this important to the community." In the meantime, however, there have been no more reported leak problems, and ADM's CO2 sequestration business continues to expand dramatically. In November, the agribusiness giant announced it had signed a non-binding memorandum of understanding with a firm called Superb 6 Carbon Inc. This deal will involve Super 6 procuring and delivering CO2 for secure geological storage from other firms at ADM's deep storage wells in Decatur. Storing the greenhouse gas this way generates regulatory CO2 reduction credits, which can be bought and sold in a commercial marketplace and are attractive to firms struggling to meet their own emissions goals. And in another significant business development, construction is expected to begin in 2026 on the new Broadwing Energy Center power station in Decatur. This gas-fired cogeneration plant will generate more than 400 megawatts of electricity, and its carbon pollution will be captured and stored underground using ADM technology. The idea for the power station has been kicking around since 2021, but took off when Google recently agreed to buy the majority of the electricity produced. The tech giant said it needs the juice to power up massive data centers that will support the ever-rising use of artificial intelligence. Now from our local page, Public Safety Decatur. From Tony Reed, new traffic cameras to add eyes on city. 10 additional flock cameras, 8 radar speed signs okayed. The Decatur Police Department believes you can't have too much of a good thing. And on Monday, it got granted one of the big items on its Christmas wish list, approval by the City Council of a $50,000 one-year lease of 10 new surveillance cameras. These will complement the 106 strong field of license plate reader cameras the cops have already deployed around Decatur. Able to record and transmit license plate data in split second, the plate reader cameras have already been credited with helping to crack crimes ranging from theft to homicide and violent robbery. Now the new solar-powered surveillance cameras will be deployed to crime trouble spots to help police keep a more wide-ranging eye on what's going on. Surveillance cameras will be strategically placed throughout Decatur in predetermined locations, informed by crime data, traffic patterns, and community feedback, said a briefing to counselors from Police Chief Brad Allen and Interim City Manager Melissa Hahn. Their primary focus will be monitoring key intersections and adjacent public areas to maximize visibility and ensure coverage of high-activity locations. Placement will be reviewed periodically to ensure cameras continue to meet community needs and operational priorities. And in further comments to the council, Chief Allen hoped the arrival of the first surveillance cameras will soon zoom out to include many more. We have identified 20 areas of town where we think they would be invaluable, he added. We're still debating where to put the first 10, and our goal would be to continue to expand this. This is a project we build upon. The council voted unanimously to push ahead with the lease for the new cameras, and Councilman David Horn said he believed law-abiding citizens would welcome them. It will just be another tool that will better make Decatur a safer place, he added. The surveillance cameras, like the license plate readers, are coming from the Flock Safety Company, whose customers also include police departments in Charleston, Mattoon, Bloomington, Normal, Taylorville, and the Coles and Livingston County Sheriff's Departments. More than 460 police departments and other agencies in Illinois have access to Flock camera data, but it's not been without some controversy. Flock was accused of breaking state law in the summer by allowing federal border enforcement officers access to Illinois license camera data, according to Illinois Secretary of State Alexei Giannoulis. Flock was also accused of allowing out-of-state police to search for a woman who recently had an abortion. That accusation had prompted the Secretary of State's office to audit Flock. At the time, the company disputed Giannoulis' conclusions, but the firm's CEO, Garrett Langley, said Flock needed to create distinct permissions and protocols in the Flock system to ensure local compliance for federal agency users. He said the firm's top lawyer was given that task. For its part, the Decatur Police Department says its use of Flock cameras is done under rules committed to transparency, accountability, and the responsible use of technology, according to the police chief and city manager. Their memo to council added, all camera data is managed in compliance with departmental policy with access limited to authorized personnel. Community engagement remains a key component of this initiative. Incorporating community feedback will strengthen trust and reinforce the shared goal of improving public safety. Overall, the expanded camera network is expected to enhance officer safety, reduce crime, increase investigative efficiency, and support quicker case resolution. And in other public safety-related business, the council agreed to splash more than $25,400 for the purchase of 8 radar traffic speed signs that show approaching drivers how fast they're going. Horn, who welcomed the arrival of the signs, said in comments before the meeting that studies have shown these signs can double the number of drivers in compliance with the speed limit. Excessive speed is one of the leading causes of accidents, and residents routinely express concerns about people driving too fast throughout the city, Horn added. The new signs are destined for West Main Street beyond Dipper Lane and Fairview Avenue, North MacArthur Road between Pershing and Mound Roads, West Mound Road between MacArthur Road and US 51, and East Mound Road between Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and Woodford Street. Historian tells of library's 150 years. The story of the Decatur Public Library's evolution from its humble beginning in 1875 to the vibrant institution it is today will be shared during a Saturday, December 20th presentation by local historian Mark Sorensen. Decatur Public Library, 150 years of community knowledge and connection, will be presented from 1 to 3 p.m. at the library, 130 North Franklin Street. Sorensen will explore the milestones that have shaped the library's legacy, from the founders who envisioned a place where all citizens could access books and learning, through the expansion of its collections and facilities, to its transformation into a modern hub offering digital resources, community programming, and inclusive spaces for all. Light refreshments will be served. The event is free and open to the public. From our food page today, we have recipes for panettone cookies, Grinchy cookies, sweets for the swap. Whether you've got guests coming or need ideas for this year's cookie swap, one of these colorful holiday-friendly recipes will fit the bill. For a touch of holiday whimsy, Grinchy cookies serve up nostalgia. Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas was published in 1957. The animated classic I've been watching since the early 70s first aired in 1966. And the Jim Carrey live-action version appeared in the theaters in the year 2000. This is a multi-generational charmer that shows up on the table in the form of a classic sugar cookie. There's nothing not to love. And for those of you who want something that looks and tastes gourmet, the panettone cookies based on the sweet fruit-studded Italian Christmas bread, use it for bread pudding. It's the best. are holiday supermodels. Now from our opinion page, the future of MAGA. Our first column is by Imran Khalid, based in Karachi, Pakistan. He writes for Inside Sources and other publications. Trump's movement isn't dying, it's going global. Will President Donald Trump's Make America Great Again movement decline or endure? It is tempting to treat the debate as exclusively domestic, but that misses half the story, because MAGA's foreign policy legacy is reverberating across capitals from Brussels to Beijing. With Trump's second entry into the Oval Office, MAGA transformed overnight from insurgent political rhetoric to the operative architecture of American policymaking. So the question is not whether MAGA survives, but how deeply its practices will reshape global diplomacy. Even before his second term, MAGA-style populism had struck U.S. foreign policy as political trauma. Its critics judged Trump's blunt nationalism and transactional instincts as irresponsible, immature, and destabilizing. But the underlying critique went deeper. It was about legitimacy. A populist challenged the structures underpinning the post-World War II international order. In response, some in the foreign policy establishment rallied around normalization. They sought to re-anchor the U.S. in traditional alliances and restore it as a reliable hegemon. That framing cast MAGA as a temporary rupture. Treating populism purely as a glitch overlooks that MAGA's foreign policy orientation follows a coherent logic rooted in nationalism. The America First doctrine embodies a broader rejection of multilateralism. Trump has repeatedly questioned core assumptions such as the relevance of NATO and the value of collective burdens. He has demanded that allies shoulder more of the military burden and they are listening. At this year's NATO summit in The Hague, member states committed to ramping up defense and security-related spending to 5% of their gross national product by 2035, a sharp increase from the long-held 2% defense benchmark. Across geographies, Trump's diplomacy remains deeply personalistic. He frequently bypasses bureaucracies and treats bilateral relationships as relationships between individuals, from world leaders to business tycoons, rather than institutional engagements. That style has weakened intra-alliance coordination and signaled to adversaries that American commitments could shift dramatically with each new administration. Transatlantic trust remains, but allies are bolstering their capabilities, modernizing arsenals and preparing contingency strategies, not as backup, but as independent pillars of security. In Asia, especially in the Indo-Pacific, MAGA's nationalistic transactional approach to diplomacy has fueled hedging strategies. Countries such as Australia, India, Japan, and South Korea, once confident in long-term U.S. commitment, are now stress-testing every American promise. Even if a post-MAGA administration later restores rhetorical warmth, the perception of alliances as burdens has shifted strategic calculations. This is not just a U.S. story. MAGA is part of a larger wave of populism reshaping global governance. Looking forward, the evolution of MAGA-style populism might take several paths. First, even if Trump recedes, his brand of populism could be inherited by others, either domestically or abroad, in a more disciplined or ideological, broader form. In that scenario, the underlying commitment to national interest over multilateralism could remain, especially in trade, security, and alliances. Alternately, foreign policy elites may re-anchor U.S. engagement in traditional alliances, not a full rollback to pre-populist norms, but a recalibrated and transactional multilateralism where cooperation remains, but only when aligned with national interest. Or MAGA's model could become embedded more deeply in global governance as other countries adopt similar leadership styles. What matters now is not the fate of a U.S. political brand. It is whether the structural legacy of MAGA endures through policies, institutions, habits of governance, and global alliances. If that view persists, the post-MAGA world may be less about retrenchment and more about reordering. Hints from Heloise. Show some kindness this holiday season. Dear Heloise, it's at this time of year that so many people feel a sense of grief during the holidays. While so many of us are enjoying family and friends during the holidays, there are thousands of people who wish desperately for someone to take them shopping or call them a couple of times a week, even if it's just to say hello and show some sincere interest and kindness. If your parents live out of state, with a visit or a card with a letter inside is always fun to get. If you have family or friends who are going through a difficult time, invite them to dinner or lunch. Most of all, stay in contact. The world can look very dark to anyone who has lost a child, a partner, or even a pet. Sometimes we can't give advice. We can only listen but show interest and assure them that we are there to support them as they grapple with their sadness. The words, "What can I do to help you?" can mean the world to another person. If at all possible, get them out of the house, visit friends together, or see a movie or play. You can have them help you with something such as a garage sale or with donating books to a hospital or nursing home. Try to get them engaged in activities and in their lives. It may be that your company and kindness is the best gift they'll receive this holiday season. Thank you for reminding us all that the season of joy can also be a season of sadness for others. Retired Dr. J.K.M. in New York. Dr. J.K.M., thank you for reminding us that the season of joy can also be a season of sadness for others. Heloise. TV background noise. Dear Heloise, I'm writing in regarding the question from Lisa B. in New Hampshire. I discovered years ago that you can lower the background music or anything else that drowns out the dialogue by setting the sound on the TV to mono instead of stereo. Adjusting the bass and treble on surround sound systems also helps. John M. in Waterbury, Connecticut. Ordering food easily. Dear Heloise, while traveling abroad, my wife and I enjoy eating the local cuisine. We've seen our accompanying friends having difficulty ordering a meal when they go up to the cashier, especially when there's no menu present. What I do is take a picture of the meals that they have advertised using my phone and show them the picture of the items we want to order. This way, we can order away with ease. Loopy L via email. Safer cooking. Dear Heloise, I left a burner on after cooking on my electric cooktop a few times. Also, a young girl in our town died when a paper box was left on a cooktop and someone bumped the knob and unwittingly turned the burner on. I decided to look for a safer alternative and found induction cooktops. There is no open flame, and the only thing that gets hot is the pan sitting on the designated burner area. If you remove the pan, the burner will turn off if you forget. It also can be locked. One downside is that you must only use pans that a magnet will stick to or buy a special interface. A plus is that it can precisely control the cooking temperature, and it can boil water super fast. I rest much easier at night knowing the burners are off, even if I forget to turn them off. Mercy G. via email. Now our nutrition column from Barbara Intermill. Cranberry season. Can you get these year-round? My husband asked over breakfast. He was referring to the fresh cranberries I used for my cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving. We have happily discovered that leftovers make a yummy topping on our morning oatmeal. Come to think of it, the only time I find fresh cranberries in our local grocery store is in November and December. Why is that? According to the Cranberry Institute, a not-for-profit organization supported by those who farm these tart berries, cranberries ripen during the cool, crisp nights of fall and are harvested in September and October. That's why fresh cranberries are so hard to find after the holidays. Other forms are available year-round, however, and they provide similar health benefits. Count 1 cup of fresh cranberries, 1/2 cup dried cranberries, or 1/2 cup, 4 ounces, of 100% cranberry juice as one of your needed 2 to 3 fruit servings each day. Nutritionally, you'll get plenty of dietary fiber, the substance that promotes gut health, in whole or dried cranberries. Cranberry juice doesn't contain fiber but has all the other good ingredients of whole berries, including potassium, a nutrient that helps control blood pressure. Although there has been some controversy over the role of cranberry products to prevent urinary tract infections, more than 25 years of research has pretty much confirmed that they are beneficial for this purpose. Scientists point to powerful flavonoid substances in cranberries that interfere with the ability of bad bacteria, such as E. coli, to adhere to the surface of the urinary tract, thus preventing infections. Drinking 8 to 16 ounces of cranberry juice a day, low-sugar varieties work too, is shown to produce this benefit. Other natural components in cranberries have also been shown to reduce the level of H. pylori, a bacterium that is a major risk factor for stomach ulcers. And like other berries, cranberries help promote heart health with naturally occurring substances that help the body maintain healthful levels of cholesterol. Cranberries are native to North America, along with blueberries and Concord grapes. I was surprised to learn, despite some of the commercials I've seen, that cranberries are not grown in water. Water is used during harvest to float the fruit for easier collection and during the winter months to protect the plants from freezing. The rest of the year, the fruit is grown on dry beds, say cranberry farmers. I tend to buy extra cranberries this time of year, and the Cranberry Institute says you can easily freeze those you don't use right away. Just seal them in an airtight container and they will keep well in the frozen state for up to a year. Oh, and don't forget to try them on your morning oatmeal. Now from our pets advice column, Santa Paws. If you're thinking about a puppy for Christmas, here are things to keep in mind. Dr. Jerry Klein, American Kennel Club. Christmas is just around the corner. A new puppy is at the top of plenty of wish lists, but is Christmas really the best time to get one? Bringing a dog into your home should be considered a commitment for the lifetime of the dog. It should be the result of a well-thought-out plan, not an impulse. The American Kennel Club offers these tips to best assess whether you're ready for a new dog. Assess your home and lifestyle. When thinking about getting a new dog, it's important to evaluate how your home and lifestyle might work for a pup. Do you live in an apartment, condo, or house? Is there a yard that has a fence or an enclosed area, or would you need to build one? Are you able to walk your puppy 4 to 5 times a day before it is housebroken? Who will be the main caretaker? If you have kids, are they ready for a dog? These are the kinds of questions you should be thinking about. Think about what kind of free time you or your family has available to take care of a dog. Do you work from home? It's crucial to think about whether your household members can come home throughout the day or whether you would need a dog walker or doggy daycare. The first months of a dog's life are formative, especially in terms of training and socialization. The cost of a new dog is more than just its purchase price. Prices for dog food and supplies rose in recent years. Boarding, grooming, and training are just some of the additional services your dog will need, and often they are in high demand and have wait lists. Even if your dog stays relatively healthy throughout its lifespan, the cost of quality vet care is significant with vaccines, wellness checks, and basic spay or neutering surgery. If something should go wrong, the cost of emergency vet visits is even more substantial, especially if the owner is financially ill-prepared. Consider starting a small savings account for your pets and look into various pet insurance policies. There are few things worse than having cost be a factor when the vet is giving you options on the care of your canine companion. At the AKC, we are proponents of researching breeds or types of dogs to find one that matches a person or family's lifestyle. To learn about a breed's origin, learn more about what breeds were bred to do, or access general breed information, visit akc.org. This kind of knowledge can help guide you in predicting probable behavior and physical characteristics. It's important to do your research, especially if there are any particular needs in your home, such as a child who has allergies. Consult your pediatrician first, and if possible, try to hang around various single-coated or hairless breeds. The amount a child is allergic to dogs may differ between breeds. Know that there are no true hypoallergenic dogs, though single-coated breeds tend to accumulate less dander, which is what causes most allergic reactions. For more information on responsible dog ownership, visit the AKC at akc.org. Today in history. On this date, in 1777, France becomes one of the first nations to officially recognize the independence of the United States. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, December 17th. Please stay tuned.